Subconscious pattern detective Lyon Goodman helps you uncover the underlying beliefs getting in the way of your greatest desires. Join us as Lyon explains how our beliefs influence our lives, the difference between beliefs and core beliefs, and why a multidimensional approach is required in order to permanently change unwanted beliefs that are no longer serving you. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Inspire Health Podcast as we continue on with our series on energy, frequency, vibration, and magnetics, the next era of healthcare. And today's guest is Lyon Goodman. And Lyon is a professional certified transformational coach, author, and teacher. He is known as the subconscious pattern detective. He developed the Clear Beliefs Method, a process for permanently clearing limiting beliefs and healing core wounds from the psyche, which he teaches to coaches, healers, and therapists around the world. His Clear Beliefs Coach Training is an ICF certified program with more than 550 graduates in 45 countries around the world. Lyon spent more than 40 years studying and practicing developmental psychology, neurobiology, linguistics, philosophy, attachment theory, shamanism, and dozens of personal growth and spiritual practices. He's taught workshops and trainings across the US, Canada, Europe, and China. He's the author of 5 books, including Creating on Purpose and How to Clear Your Client's Limiting Beliefs. He's published dozens of articles on consciousness, beliefs, psychology, and inner development. Lyon provides transformative coaching to coaches, entrepreneurs, and leaders around the world. Lyon, what a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Jason. Thank you, Taya, for having me. It's really great to be here with you.
You know, we reached out to you early on when we were trying to put this series together because, as most people know, as we're talking to different guests, we're talking about energy, frequency, vibration, magnetics, all of these different things. But we kind of felt that something that was really important to touch on, because it's at such a core level for most people, is really beliefs. And in some capacity, that may affect all of these other things. And so we'd come across your work, how long back?
About 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, when we were doing a workshop with
Anadea Judith
on the book that you guys wrote together, Creating on Purpose, was the workshop that we were doing. And so she actually said, if people want to really go a deeper dive into beliefs, they needed to go check out your work and take your course. So we reached out to get you because we knew from what our experience was, you were kind of one of the main guys knowing about beliefs. So we wanted to tap your brain on that and bring that awareness to this audience.
I'm happy to bring what I know here and also what I don't know.
Well, why don't we start off? I'd love to know, just, I always like to understand people's journeys a little bit, as far as how did you get into just making your whole life in so many ways around the detective of subconscious patterns and underlying beliefs?
Well, I started out at a very early age believing that there was something wrong with me. And that was good rocket fuel. You know, it's like if you think something's wrong with you, you want to fix it. So I studied everything I could to try to fix myself. Fortunately, after decades of study, I found out that there was nothing essentially wrong with me. So that was good news. But it did cause me to go on this long journey of learning. And I was lucky to have a teacher very early on, when I was 19 years old, who asked the questions, what is the nature of human nature? And what is the nature of human consciousness? And that kind of spurred me to study everything I could in college, from philosophy to drama and even mime, dance, as well as neurophysiology, philosophy, psychology, everything I could get my hands on that could answer those two primary questions. And so that inquiry became a lifetime inquiry, because the human consciousness is so vast and who we are as people is so amazing and multidimensional that you end up applying everything to you. You know, cosmology is, we're part of cosmology. We're part of the universe. We're made of star stuff. You know, geology, we're made of matter. You can take any topic and apply it to yourself. And this was what my teacher taught me, is that any topic can be made relevant by applying it to yourself. So it was a grand life study, self-study, and it got me here because I realized everything kept pointing to beliefs as the core issue that it affected our behavior and our choices and our vision and our perception and how we lived our lives and what we thought and how we related to each other. So everything kept pointing to that thing called beliefs. And so I began my study in depth of beliefs And I studied everything I could about them. What did other people say about them? How did they change them? What were their methodologies? And I ended up taking over 100 workshops and trainings to answer that question. And what I found was that most of the techniques that were out there worked a little bit, kind of partially, temporarily. It was good for a while. I got a little high, you know, from the experience. But then I was back to my old tricks, you know, 2 weeks later. So that took my journey to the next level, which is how do you change beliefs completely and permanently so that they don't come back? How do you really change? What's the core of transformation within the self?
Beautiful. You mentioned something too, where you said human consciousness, and consciousness has come up in lots of the conversations, and I know will come up in more of the conversations to come. I'm wondering from your perspective, from when you were working with your teacher and what you've kind of arrived at now, when you think about the concept of human consciousness, what does that mean?
Again, I was very fortunate to have this teacher who had his own theory, and he had a PhD and a couple of master's degrees from the University of Chicago. He also had a school in the mountains of Colorado in nature. He had what he called the brain in nature course. And so we were studying neurology, sitting around in the forest with deer walking by to understand ourselves and applying neurology to our own development. And he said in physics, there are four fundamentals: space, time, energy, and matter. And the reason they're fundamentals is because you can't say they're made of something else. So we know that space-time is related, space and time are related in some way, and energy and matter are related, E equals MC squared. And he said, consciousness is the fifth fundamental. There is nothing more fundamental than consciousness. And someone said that, you know, there are things and there's awareness of things. And if you include both, you've got the whole universe. So consciousness is fundamental to who we are as beings. It's everywhere. There's a philosophy called panentheism, which is like everything is conscious. And that's what I believe. Everything has a certain level of consciousness. It is a fundamental. How is the universe created? It was a good idea. Where'd the idea come from? It came from consciousness, some essential consciousness that said, this would be fun. So that's how I see it.
I'd love to jump into beliefs a little bit. So what are beliefs and where do they come from? I mean, what are some of the biggest influencers of our beliefs?
Okay, well, let's see, do we have a couple of days to talk about this?
Just a short question to kickstart things off.
Yeah, okay, good, good. I could talk forever on this topic. So the simplest explanation I have is a friend of mine, Jeremy Lent, wrote a book called The Patterning Instinct. And I think that's the best name for it. It's like when we are born, we have an instinct to try to take this swirling, shifting experience that you're having as a newborn and somehow figuring out how to navigate within it. So if you entered a new universe that you had never been to before, that where the rules were all different, what would you do first? You'd look for patterns. Gee, that little squiggly thing looks like that little squiggly thing. That shape is similar to that shape, but they're different sizes. So this, our instinct is to find patterns. And for a baby who's born needing parents to survive, the survival instinct kicks in. It's like, what do I need to figure out in order to survive? So when this face comes close to me, I get taken care of and I feel warm and nurtured. When that face comes toward me, I feel frightened and uncomfortable. So this is early pattern detection. It turns out that infants in the womb, fetuses in the womb, are doing this already. Babies in the womb can recognize the difference between the mother's voice and the father's voice. And if the mother is experiencing fear, for example, from war or poverty or abusive husband, her hormones, her fear hormones are going through not just herself, but also through the placenta into the baby. So the baby's experiencing the same fear she is. And the baby may conclude, because babies have conclusions also, the world isn't safe. And that's not going to be a verbal concept. It's an experiential one. because babies don't have words yet. We don't have words for the first couple of years of our life. But we do have conclusions. We do figure out how to move the body. And I have a 1.5-year-old grandson who just started, you know, using a spoon, right? He's able to get food to his mouth. And that was a long period of trying to figure out how to get food to his mouth. He started using his fingers pretty quickly. But watching that development, it's like, oh, yeah, he's identifying how does this muscle work so that I can do this without doing this? You know, it's like, it's just so cute to watch. And if you watch developmental, the development of babies, they're doing this, they're figuring out the world and they're experimenting also. They're little scientists. So they'll throw something off of their high chair and then mom goes and puts it back and they go, oh, that's fun. Let's do that again. It's like, I can control mom's behavior. Look, I can make something go away and it comes back. Isn't that cool? So this is the joy of growing up in a healthy household, is that you get to explore and find out what the world is. And babies also want to imitate their parents. So they're listening to language very early and they're understanding language before they can speak, before they have the power over their vocal cords. So they're imitating, and this is just part of growing. So we're trying to figure out the world, and that's what beliefs are. They are the things we figure out, and mostly for our survival. Now, what's interesting is that if you want to belong to a group, what's the best way to belong? You take on their beliefs, right? You've probably heard of Stockholm syndrome, where if somebody gets captured by terrorists, in a couple of weeks, they end up spouting what the terrorists believe, right? Well, babies are experiencing Stockholm syndrome. This big person in their life, it has their life in their hands. They could die at any moment. Their parents could throw them out to the wolves or shove them down the toilet. So they want to adopt the beliefs of their parents because that will make them like their parents, similar to them, and therefore their parents will like them more. And therefore, they will survive more. So this is the real fundamental underpinning of beliefs, is they were putting together an understanding of the world so we can navigate in the world and survive. And we take them on eagerly because that they are survival tools.
Well, that probably makes sense then as to why beliefs sometimes can be so incredibly difficult, or at least it seems to be so incredibly difficult to make changes to, if they're rooted in survival instinct in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. There's a part of the brain-mind system that says, don't change that belief. It's what enables you to survive. Or if they are I am beliefs, if they're self-beliefs, that's who I am. I can't change that. Because the I am is the ego's need to be sustainably itself. You know? And so, yeah, the beliefs are very deeply, they're the infrastructure of the human mind. In the same way that neurons and glial cells are the infrastructure of the human brain, beliefs are the infrastructure of the human mind. They are what we create our world with. They're like, you know, infrastructure, like the pipes and the underground. You know, if they were all above ground, we couldn't walk around very easily, you know. So we put these beliefs in our subconscious mind, and they're our operating system. I often call it the human operating system. So if you're going to mess with a human operating system, you'd better be careful. And the ego does not want it to be messed with.
When do beliefs start to become problematic? So people, for the most part, if a belief is really working well, then that seems to be a good thing to hang on to. But I think the tricky part is when I guess two parts. Either we realize that we've got a belief that is not necessarily serving us very well anymore, or we're not even conscious of the fact that we've even got these subconscious beliefs that are actually, in many ways, dictating what our life is going to look like. So when does that start to become a problem? And then how do we even start to become aware of that in the first place?
Problems. When you have problems in your life, that's when you start questioning your beliefs, right? But let me take a step back. So because beliefs are the infrastructure, they're also the lenses we look through. You know, so if you come to the conclusion, or if you're programmed with the belief life is hard, everywhere you look, you see life is hard, because like sunglasses that allow some frequencies in and bounce some frequencies off, our belief structure is a lens that we look through. And when we're looking through it, we see it's true. We see evidence everywhere, and we ignore evidence that's contrary to it. That's called confirmation bias in psychology, right? So we see what we believe. So people can get stuck in their beliefs really deeply and hard. You know, if you've ever tried to convince a fundamentalist in any realm, religion, politics, science, you know, that there's something other than what they believe, it's really hard. Basically, people dig in deeper when you try to change their beliefs by even presenting facts. You know, facts are, that fact doesn't fit in my worldview, right?
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
So as an operating system, we're constantly looking through it. Now, as children, we're adopting beliefs to survive, and they're good if you survive. That's a good belief to have, right? So. For example, a child who has an angry parent might come to the conclusion and strategy. So I'm talking about beliefs and strategies as elaborations on each other. If I stay quiet, I won't get hit. That is a very good adaptive behavior. It's an adaptive belief, right? It helps you survive. Now, one of the problems with the mind is that it has a fundamental belief or a fundamental structure that says, if I'm in danger and I do something and I survive, I have to keep doing that thing to keep surviving. And this is one of the deep pattern sets that we get into. So the child who comes to the conclusion, if I stay quiet, I will survive, and they do survive, then they end up being a quiet person for the rest of their life. And so it was adaptive as a child, but it became maladaptive as an adult. So now it's actually getting in the way of their life because they're not speaking up for themselves. They're not getting what they want, right? Because they're keeping quiet so they don't get in trouble with dad or whatever it was in the first place. So that's how we get in trouble, is that old beliefs don't go away. They don't have expiration dates like meat at the butcher counter, right? They should. You know, this belief will expire in 5 years or when you find a better one, whichever comes first. You know, that'd be great. But what happens is they just get stored in the subconscious mind and other beliefs get put on top of them. It's like snowflakes coming down. Each one is a belief and it's not a big deal, one of them. But if there's millions of them, they create snowdrifts. Right. So the snowdrifts start to get in our way, these piles of beliefs. And then what happens is as we're growing, we come to contrary beliefs, like Santa Claus is a magical being who comes down your chimney and delivers presents. Oh, wait a minute. Mom and dad are Santa Claus. Okay. Now, Santa Claus is a magical being doesn't go away. It just gets pushed down by mom and dad or Santa Claus. So the magical thinking that was there is still there, but it's deeper. And so we pile on all these beliefs, and the conflicting beliefs are the ones that really mess us up. And we have tens of thousands of beliefs and probably tens of thousands of contrary beliefs. So, you know, I want to lose weight, but I don't really want to give up sweets. Well, those are two beliefs that are in conflict with each other. I want to be healthy, but I hate exercise. Now we've got two beliefs that are pushing against each other, and resistance creates persistence. So you've got a persistent condition. That means there's two beliefs that are pushing against each other. And now what? Now you either feel stuck or stymied, or you procrastinate because you've got this battle going on, or you are in a relationship where the same blow up happens over and over again because there's belief conflicts, or you go on a diet and then you get off, and you go on a diet and you get off, and you go on a diet. We've all known that pattern, right? So that's where we get into trouble with our lives, is when there's repeated patterns, when things don't change, when there's something we don't like, when we're procrastinating, when we're stuck, blocked, or where there's resistance to doing what we naturally know is best and want to do. That means there's old beliefs in the way.
Lion, how do you identify or distinguish between beliefs and core beliefs? Because even when you were speaking of, I'd love to lose weight and I love sweets, I feel like, especially after having our third child, I came to the realization that all of these things that we oftentimes struggle with on a surface level, you know, I want to lose weight, I want a better job, I want to have peace with my spouse, all these things that we kind of go on a daily basis and think about and consider periodically, I feel like that's just on the surface. And I know on my own journey, the more I sat with those considerations and thoughts that came up, underlying a lot of those superficial conversations or monologues that come up within our lives is I'm not good enough, I'm unlovable, I'm not worthy. And those are hard to come to, because I know for me, when I personally sat with it long enough, contemplated, considered these things on a deeper level, just wanted to kind of get to the heart of issues. When I got to the I'm not lovable, it was like a, you know, really loud, ugly cry that came out as a release when I was sitting with that and working through that. So I was wondering, based on your practice and what you've seen, how do you distinguish between superficial beliefs and really core beliefs, like underlying all the stuff that comes up on a daily basis?
Great question. And core beliefs are often I am beliefs. They are self-beliefs. I am not good enough. And or there's something wrong with me. And just to give you an example, there's something wrong with me is, to me, the most popular belief out there. It's one that I've seen in most people around the world. It doesn't matter what culture you grew up in. And when I looked into it, I said, well, what's the basis of that? Why would a child come to that conclusion? Well, I realized that, you know, when you're an infant, you're looking around at your siblings, your older siblings, and your mother and your father, and they're doing things like feeding themselves and walking and talking and communicating, and you can't do that. And so what conclusion could you come to other than, wow, there must be something wrong with me? Nobody says, hey, you're a baby, you're right on time, everything's cool, you're going to grow, we're going to teach you how to do this, you know, don't worry, just relax, be a baby, it's cool. Nobody says that to the babies. The baby's kind of going, well, what's going on here? Why can't I do those things? Then, of course, if you have older siblings, you're growing up where they can do things you can't do all through childhood, right? Because they're 2 or 3 or 5 years older. And so, you know, I'm not good enough. I can't do what they can do. No, you're right on time. You know, it's like everything's cool. You're good. You know, it's like you will be like them when you get to their age, but there's this thing called time and you're on this time schedule. So we come to these conclusions, and children come to conclusions about themselves because they can't blame their parents. That would be anti-survival. wow, mom and dad are really screwed up. They should have taken psychology 101 in high school, and they need some therapy, serious therapy, and they should do a couple workshops because they have no idea how to raise me as an infant. Like, they can't do that. They don't have the sophistication of mind to be able to do that. So they are sort of self-creating their life. They're figuring out who they are. They're experiencing their circumstances, and they're coming to conclusions based on the circumstances and blaming themselves. There must be something wrong with me. I'm not lovable. They don't know that, no, it's your mom's busy. She's got three other kids and a job, and your dad's off to work and traveling. There's not enough care for you. It's not your problem. It's not your fault. It's just the circumstances. Now, a child doesn't know that. So they conclude, wow, I'm not getting the love I need. I'm not getting the care I need. I'm not getting nurtured. I guess it's because I'm not good enough, or there's something wrong with me. So this is where core beliefs start. And core beliefs often are formed in the first 2 years of life before we have words. The problem with most therapies and belief change technologies is that they're verbal. You have these techniques based on words and sentences, but that's not where the core beliefs are. They're not connected to the verbal mind or the conscious mind. They're subconscious and they're pre-verbal. So you have to get to the experiential part. That's what you did, Teo, by sitting with the feeling. You got to the experience of it and found the truth of the experience. So that takes some deep diving, and most people aren't willing to do that. So in my work, we focus on core beliefs, because beliefs come in clusters. So they're kind of clustered together like a whole bunch of balloons tied together, right? And there's one at the center that's kind of the core. That's the pre-verbal one. And then these other beliefs get attached to them and they start reinforcing themselves. So if you can get to the center balloon and pop it, the whole thing can fly apart. But mostly you're sort of picking them off at the outside, but it takes time to do that until you can get to the core. And then when the core pops, boom, it's gone and it doesn't come back. So it's powerful work when you can get to those core beliefs. And in my training, I teach 14 different methods for finding core beliefs. It's that important. And it's not easy. And it does take some finesse and some understanding of how we come to them and then how they start operating in our lives.
That's very neat. And I love that, because mm-hmm. my own background, and I gravitated towards these realms because of my own experiences in life, which made me feel unlovable, not good enough, you know, the usual, which is very common. We see it when as you probably know, it's like the more you work with people, everyone is coming in with very similar core beliefs. So for us to have workshops and for you to have workshops and events, you just recognize these commonalities that just as a consequence of being in human form at this time, there are just these commonalities as far as the core beliefs that we are all coming face to face with. I know that, and I can't wait to actually attend one of your events and one of your trainings, because I'm sure it'll be phenomenal and we'll be able to dive deeper and deeper, because we've also found that, you know, just when you think you've worked through some of the core beliefs, it's almost like peeling an onion. There's just more and more depth, more layers that kind of rise to the surface. Like, oh, I thought I worked through you.
Well, or you find like it shows up in another relationship, mm-hmm. but it's the same underlying core belief. Mm-hmm. So it might be like, okay, I feel like I figured that one out with my partner. And then next thing you know, years later, you're like, I kind of feel like this might be a similar core belief that's going on with my work environment or even with my kids. And you realize that you're kind of sort of working at it or getting an opportunity to work with it from another perspective, but it's still touching those same chords.
That's true. And also beliefs, because they're the infrastructure, depending on what your circumstances or relationship is, it's going to stimulate the same core, right? But different beliefs get stimulated by different circumstances and different people. So, Teo, you mentioned attracting people of a certain kind, and beliefs also operate as a kind of attractant, because your wound is like a searchlight, you know, looking for somebody that that has the opposite wound, the equal and opposite wound. And so we're constantly looking for someone that can fill that space.
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
But because babies learn what love is from their parents, from watching their parents interact, watching them interact with themselves and their siblings, that's what love is. So if love is, if there's abuse going on, or there's arguments going on, or there's withdrawal and isolation going on, like there was with my parents were like two ships in the night passing, you know, by not talking to each other for the most part. So what happens is the child goes, that's what love is. And so then when they become an adult, they start looking for a person to love who will love them. And so they look for someone who feels and smells familiar. And familiar has the same root as family, right? It's like, so the subconscious mind is looking for someone who will reproduce that state, even if it's abuse, even if it's arguments, even if it's, you know, withdrawal and isolation. So that's why people get into these repeated patterns. They're just looking for love. At the conscious level, I want someone who's, you know, gorgeous and talented and, you know, will love me and has, you know, but subconsciously we're that searchlight's out looking for somebody that's just like mom and dad. So that's why we keep going, getting married to mom or dad or both.
And that's when you go, shit.
How did this happen again?
I know firsthand, and I really did a deep dive into beliefs too. It was after going through literally relationship after relationship that was the same pattern, but just kind of got more intense in the same pattern until I really started to work with it. And, you know, and like you said, there's lots of different ways to try and work with it. And you might get some practices that really dive into it and other ones that might get parts of it. I remember when I first did it, and part of it was just around the core belief of being okay with being in a loving relationship. And I remember even opening that up. And when we sort of went through it, it was like just even being okay being in a relationship, period. So it really took me down the rabbit hole of sort of working with that. And as same like Tara said, a lot of the core underlying beliefs around not being lovable, not being good enough, a lot of those things at some point usually surface. And like she said, they're an intense visceral sensation in the body when you come to those. But it was shortly after working with that then Tan and I met, and we had both kind of been working on those things. And it was almost like that pattern really got dissolved. It really did dissolve. And then it seemed like from that almost, I mean, I think of it almost like from a state of consciousness, as like I was living in a certain contracted state of consciousness that only allowed certain possibilities of the infinite possibilities that I was privy to. When that got dissolved, I literally expanded into a different state of consciousness that brought other options like Taya into my life, which was not there until that allowed itself.
Exactly. And that's what happens when you clear core beliefs or clear beliefs, you know, in mass, is that new possibilities open. Now you're not restricted. Your vision's not restricted by the old beliefs. Your behavior is not restricted by your old beliefs. Your relationships are not restricted by your old beliefs. You clear them and new possibilities open. You just stated it very clearly. As you do that process, as you clean out those old programs, you know, we're people say the brain's like a computer. It's not really. It's the most complex thing we know of in the universe. So it's much more than that. And it's also multidimensional because we are multidimensional beings. And our experience is multidimensional. We're seeing, hearing, feeling, thinking, you know, emoting all the time, constantly, everywhere, right? So we are multidimensional. Our experience is multidimensional. And beliefs are therefore multidimensional because they're made of experience. So in order to clear a belief completely, you need to clear it multidimensionally. And that's why most techniques don't work for complete clearing that results in permanent erasure, because you're just clearing it from the verbal mind, or you're just clearing it from the subconscious, but not the conscious and superconscious, or you're clearing it physically through, you know, physical action, but you're not clearing it from the verbal mind. So that's what I discovered in all of my research and finally figured it out. This is why most techniques don't work very well, because they're unidimensional. You know, if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? So, you know, oh, this technique works for everything. I'm going to, but it doesn't. So that's why I teach 15 different methods that are like a tool set. You know, like carpenter comes in to your house with a tool belt, he can fix almost anything, or he's got the rest in the car, you know. So that's what I teach, as a tool set, because every individual is unique. Every individual's problems is unique. You have to treat them as an individual with their own background, their own beliefs, their own infrastructure. And then you can help people heal completely and do what you did over time much more rapidly.
You touched on this a little bit, but for viewers, can you break down a little bit the relationship with working with beliefs between things like subconscious, conscious mind, and then the superconscious mind or the higher self, how those three things interplay when you're really wanting to work with beliefs?
Yeah, this is the basis of my whole program, which is that how do you deal with them all at once? What do you need to do to clear a belief from all aspects of self? First, you have to understand the nature of the self, this multidimensionality. And then you have to understand the nature of how we come to these beliefs through this patterning instinct and conclusions and strategies that work. And then now they're in the way. And then all of my techniques are based on a multidimensional experiential process. So, for example, the body wisdom process is one of our go-to tools, and it gets people in touch with the experience in their body of whatever that belief is creating the feeling of in their body. So that's where we often start. It's like, well, how is it embodied? You can use your consciousness to identify the shape and size of a sensation in the body. And then you can actually glean information from it. You can have it be like a messenger talking to you. And that's how we connect with the subconscious mind. So my goal is to communicate directly with the subconscious mind while being conscious, while being aware of the superconscious mind, so that all three are involved in the process at once, right? So we use the imaginal processes, you know, of visualization and guided imagery, because that gets the person, while they're conscious, we don't have to put them in some trance state to do that. Close your eyes and imagine that you're walking through a forest. You know, so they're conscious. They're allowing the subconscious mind to speak through its language. It doesn't speak in English. It speaks in images, sensations, feelings, you know, and memories, right? So all the techniques that I teach are all about going right to that experiential core, experiencing it in And then when there's a clearing, it clears all at once rather than the little bits at a time.
I'm thinking of an example. So I know that in Anadea Judith's course that we did, the course on creating on purpose, which is based on the book that you and her co-wrote together, there was it consisted of a lot of, similar to what you describe, the meditation, the imagery, the visualization, and the experiential. So just one example of what was offered, and this is written in your book as well, was, you know, 15 to 20 minutes of an allotted time where you're surrounded by a number of people. So within our group at that time, within that particular workshop, I think we had three or four people in each group. But it's within that 15 to 20 minute time period, we would take turns, and the person in the middle would basically ask what she needed and what she required of the three or four other people within the group for the 15 and or 20 minute period. And I remember it was a very visceral feeling for me that came up. It was uncomfortable. It was uncomfortable to ask for that which I needed or wanted or desired from another person. And I think this is really powerful stuff because, you know, I had done a lot of talk therapy, and I feel like a lot of people who feel like there's something wrong with them, they go to the therapist and they re-traumatize themselves because all they're doing is ruminating about what has gone wrong. And I did that for a long time, and that did absolutely nothing for me. and I feel like because of that, I went into, similar to your path, went into psychology and philosophy to ask deeper questions, to try to dive deeper into human consciousness and what this is all about in order to be able to make the necessary changes within me that I essentially longed to do. It was like this innate intelligence is calling me forth in order to, you know, work through all these issues and heal all these wounds so I can come to a place of wholeness once again. And these experiences that you offer, you know, within that book specifically, and I'm sure within your trainings, is really powerful. And it's one of those things where people can talk about it and can know about it, but going in and within the safety of a group setting that a facilitator like yourself creates, and there's other people there, so there's almost a sense of vulnerability also that comes up of being looked at and being seen and being witnessed that comes up. And then these experiences that are set up that we're working through and the feelings that sprout up from them, it's pretty phenomenal and powerful. And within that setting that you're creating, there's healing that's taking place.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, indeed. So it is through our experience. Remember, experience is multidimensional, right? So when you're put in a situation which you get to ask for whatever you want, knowing that people can say no, but you can ask for whatever you want, right? That is an experience that you haven't had in life. You know, who knows, your parents might have said, stop asking for so much, or don't be so demanding, or don't be needy, right? Well, children are needy. That's when you're told not to be a child as a child, it's kind of confusing, right? So we start adopting and adapting to these admonitions and rules of our parents. And then we're cutting off a whole set of experiences that are fully human. We have these archetypes, like the king who says, bring me mead and bring me meat and bring me, you know, bring me a beautiful concubine. You know, and so, and we kind of go, wow, that's cool. You know, but I could never experience that. That's not me. So whatever we say, that's not me, that goes into the shadow, that goes into our subconscious mind. And so when you get to experience something you've never experienced before, it does stimulate all of those parts of you. I go, God, why haven't I been doing this my whole life? You know, it's like, why haven't I been able to ask for what I want my whole life? Well, there's a reason for it. And we just go right down to the reason. You know, what was the experience that started that sequence of belief behaviors and decisions and choices? And when you do that, when you dive down into the core material, then you can lift it up, look at it and go, oh, yeah, I don't really want that anymore. And and then you have ways of getting rid of it. So that's the advantage of traveling the world or doing something you've never done before, is you get to experience something new, and that will bring up the old stuff that's been in the way. Now, I have this analogy. It's like if you were in the jungle and you wanted to go someplace through the jungle, but there's all kinds of stuff in the way and you can't get from here to there, you know, because it's so dense, right? But if you have a machete in your hand, you can clear whatever's in your way and take a step forward. And then you can clear what's in your way then and take a step forward and clear your way and take another step forward. And this is what I teach. I basically give people a machete to clear whatever comes up that's in the way, and then they can move forward in life. And then something else will come up, and all their old belief will come up. And then you use the technology to clear that. And now you're limitless because there's nothing standing in your way.
Yeah, I actually really like that analogy. I used to use something in a similar way when we talk to patients around sort of how neural networks work, right? And how we get sort of lined up in certain patterns of thinking and certain patterns of doing. And I would usually explain it in a similar way where I'd say, like, most of the time we just follow this path that's so well trodden. We know it with our eyes closed. And when you're trying to create sort of these new patterns, you literally have to pull out your machete and hack through the jungle. And it's a lot of work sometimes initially, but if you keep doing it over and over and keep going down that new path, eventually that becomes a little bit more streamlined, a little bit clearer, a little bit easier to go down. And the old one actually starts to, then the jungle grows back over it a little bit more. And then that actually becomes a little bit harder then to go down in quite the same capacity. And this new one starts to become more your default as opposed to that old one with practice.
Yes, that is the standard model for brain change. And I'm going to take issue with it. The reason that that is how it's explained is because the core belief at the bottom is not cleared first. So you're trying to pound on the old belief. This is where affirmations came in, right? Well, if you just pound on that old belief enough, eventually it'll go away, but it doesn't. It just keeps coming back, right? So you got to pound on it some more. Well, eventually it doesn't come back quite as strong. This is like pulling weeds by stomping on them. Damn it, die, you know, but it doesn't die. It just grows back stronger. It's like, screw you. I'm a plant. I'm going to come back. But if you pull the weed out by the root, then it doesn't come back. So this is where I take issue with all these. These are all outside in technologies. Well, if you're doing that, do this instead. And if you do it often enough, the habit will change over time. But most people give up way before that happens, right? I mean, so it's just too hard to change habits. But if you go to the core and you clear what's at the core, then the new behavior just happens automatically. It's like, instead of throwing seeds on rocky, weedy ground, first you clear the ground, you clear the rocks and the weeds out. Then when you plant your seeds, then they blossom, grow, and bear fruit or flowers. Mm-hmm. And so why not do that? It's a much easier path. Otherwise, you're throwing seeds on rocky, weedy ground and you're not going to get much impact.
Yeah, I love that line. I think that makes tons of sense. And it's kind of like the difference when that core belief gets cleared, then there's just not this anchor kind of holding you down. So it's like, rather than trying to push the rock up the mountain over and over and over again, it's like you just step into something different. Or because at least what it felt like to me whenever I've kind of gotten to a core belief is that it wasn't so much work to keep trying to do the next thing. It's sort of like when I talked about you step into a new field of consciousness, and sometimes what it feels like to me is it feels like then it actually feels, the feeling inside doesn't feel like work so much or trying to constantly motivate myself. You feel more inspired or more like you're being drawn up as opposed to trying to force yourself up.
Exactly. Exactly. You're being pulled forward rather than pushing the rock. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One question I have is when How is someone able to really authentically see their beliefs from a place of complete clarity when they're often trying, when they're often looking at their beliefs through the lens of their own beliefs? How do you start to work with that conundrum?
It's tricky, isn't it? It's sort of like examining consciousness.
It's easy to kind of get caught up in almost like lying to yourself a bit, even though you're not wanting to, but you're being fooled.
Yes, yes. I'm often asked, you know, can I use these techniques to clear my own beliefs? And I say, absolutely, you can. But however, you can learn to cut your own hair. You know, you're never going to be great at it. You know, you'll be adequate, right? But you don't have the objectivity of a stylist, right? So you're going to be mediocre at best. However, so you can learn to cut your own hair, but you wouldn't want to try doing your own brain surgery. It's probably not a good idea, right? So brain surgery is like going to those core things that you can't see because you're inside of them. And so that's when we recommend working with a coach who can guide you through the process, who can see more than you can because you can't see it because you're inside of it. You're operating through it and it's transparent to you. So, you know, all you see is the world. You're seeing reality around you, right? And that reality is shaped and colored by your belief structure, but you don't see the belief structure. You don't see the lens you're looking through. You're just looking out at the world. It's like if you wear glasses or contacts, you know, you're seeing the world sharp, and then you take them off and you go, whoa, that's a different world. That is not as sharp as it was before. It's that kind of thing. It's like when you wake up, you know, when you wake up through meditation or through enlightenment or whatever technique you're using, you start seeing more clearly, but you're still seeing through the old beliefs. And that's why they're hard to remove, because they're the structure that you're seeing through, that they're the structure you're seeing with, actually. That's how deep it goes.
This comes to the end of our time for this episode. Please go to inspirehealthpodcast.com and listen to the remainder of this important episode. Thank you so much.